This week, is there value in the rubbish of the temple? What do those less than perfect stones do for us in the rest of our lives? Could they be lessons preparing us for future obstacles? Then we'll hear a response from a festive board regarding the 47th problem of Euclid. At a recent festive board in Cary Grove, Illinois, one brother brings a personal touch to his 47th problem of Euclid response. In a special segment, he's recorded it for us, and you'll hear it here first. Then, a letter to the brothers the world over about the importance of the esoteric in Freemasonry and our charge to light the fire of education in every man that comes through our doors. Steve Harrison stops by for an all-new Masonic Minute talking about the cable toe and gives us a contemporary response to what it could mean for us. Lastly, we wrap it up with a tarot card draw. What do we do about adversity? All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 543. My thanks goes out to all of the support for this podcast, our contributors, fellows, and producers, and of course, our legacy partners who help make this podcast possible every single week. If you want to know more about how to assist the WCY podcast, head on over to wcypodcast.com/support the show. You can just click on that when you get to the website as well. I've got a succinct show for you this week because I am heading off to the Midwest Conference of Masonic Education in Kansas City, Missouri. I'll be seeing a good number of all of our friends who have been pushing Masonic education across the United States. And chances are, if you enjoy Masonic education, you probably know some of the people I'll be rubbing elbows with this upcoming weekend. And if you're listening to this on Sunday, I probably just got back from the conference, and I will report on what happened and all of that on next week's episode. You're going to want to make sure you tune in next week to hear the updates from the Midwest Conference, to hear about all of the interesting things that are going on in the world of Masonic education in the Midwest and a little bit north. So, really excited about that. Heading down with my good friend Spencer Hammon, a fellow brother of my lodge, past master of Space Novum. He is a current district education officer and a prolific writer and craftsman. So, I'll be seeing Chad Lasik down there also. He and I are both representing Illinois. Our chairman, Brother Michael Overturf, is not going to be able to make it down, so Chad and I are going in his place, so there will be at least three Illinois brothers heading down to the conference, myself, Chad, and Spencer. Of course, this conference really is open to pretty much any Freemason, Master Mason who's into education. It's primarily focused around our educational rock stars, right? Our lodge education officers, our district and area educators across the states, and this has everything to do with education and literally nothing to do with ritual instruction, which is a key thing here. So anyway, more on that next week. For this week, we've got a couple things to go through, and we've also got some content that's been curated for us. So let's get right into it. The first thing I want to do for you this week is read a piece from the Midnight Freemasons. It's by Brother Ken Stasinski, and it's called Reclaiming the Rejected Stone. Here we go. In my contemplations, I often think about the lodge as a representation of my inner being. The physical world is outside, and the only thing that can enter are materials to build my temple, be it thoughts, commitments, or experiences. The metal tools of the profane can only be applied to such things before they become part of us. Of course, we don't vet such visitors most of the time. We allow socialization, propaganda, and attacks against us of all sorts to seep in. They become a part of us, whether we want them to or not. It's too late to work on what might have, should have, or could have been. After a while, we must establish a refuse pile. Some might say, this is our subconscious. Those things we don't want to think about or deal with. But what if it's more of a storehouse? After all, I have a basement of tools, some of which I may never use, but surprisingly, there are times I am glad I didn't throw something away. It could be a scrap of wood, a bent screwdriver that still can pry things, or that odd piece of hardware that just happens to fit a project my wife wants me to do unexpectedly. And then there's trauma. There's hurt. There are the judgments of when we weren't good enough or embarrassed, or just didn't win at a game we invested a lot of emotion and energy into. There are regrets. What if at least one of those stones was crafted by the great architect for a purpose we as yet do not know? What if no matter how unsquare or unfitting, by our human judgment, a stone is, there's some important place for it anyway? Before raising an arch, you might not comprehend what a keystone is for. You don't know where it came from or why. Was it a mistake? Or part of some greater plan by someone greater than ourselves? What if that time we messed up, or were betrayed, or burned with unrequited love wasn't part of our plan, but part of a plan made for us? What if surviving some terrible thing imbued us with the strength to overcome a hardship later in life? What if our painful times of need made us more charitable to other people's hurt or needs? What if those stones are already holding up arches, making our character better throughout a life that may not be as well lived without them? Maybe it's time to go through my rubbish pile, looking for that one stone that is ugly, imperfect, and just plain doesn't make sense. Maybe it's the key to something or someone I need more than I realize. Maybe the pegboard of the soul is God's trestle board, and it's my job to put everything in its proper place, to figure out what each item is for. Or have faith there's a reason for everything. Then, when the task comes, I will know where to find the right tools and the material I planned to reject. Maybe even my very self will become a thing of strength, wisdom, and beauty. Brother Ken Sosinski, or JP as we call him. Brother Ken is somebody that I think is such an interesting individual. He is certainly part of a group of Master Masons that I have been introduced to, and that I consider myself a student of the same type of cloth, if you will. He is always thinking about our conscience, our working tools, and the lessons that Freemasonry is teaching us in ways that are practical. I have often felt that there are situations in life that, without having had those experiences, I would not be the person I am today and able to overcome the things that I have overcome in my life. Certainly, the rubbish pile matters. Maybe, as Ken suggests, it's not so much rubbish, but like that cable bin that we all have, you know? The cords and things that we save, because we just don't know when we'll need them again, or maybe we'll never need them, but as long as it's not emotional hoarding, and we can let some things go, I think it's a good idea to remember where we came from. These indeed are some Masonic tools that we just call the rubbish pile, I suppose. For our Craftsman Plus, I'd love to hear about any situation in your life that has happened that you really felt was like a why me moment. Maybe, you know, in a past life when you were not as open to some of the thinking you are today. And then maybe the follow-up to that is, once you've thought about that time, what did that teach you and what did that help you overcome later? I'd love to hear your answers. I'll, of course, put mine in there also, in the Craftsman Plus group, so thanks very much. Next up, last week, I read my response to the Worldwide Brotherhood for a table lodge that I went to. One of the responses that came just before my own was a brother named Reb Belsner, and he's out of Mason in Illinois also. He was at Cary Grove Lodge, and I thoroughly enjoyed his response to what we toasted, which was to the 47th problem of Euclid. I asked him if I could either read it or if he would mind reading it for the program, and he agreed to record it and send it over, and so I'd like to play that for you all right now.
The 47th problem of Euclid teaches Masons to be general lovers of the arts and sciences. Growing up, I spent most of my weekends in Chicago visiting my father. My parents divorced when I was rather young. A lot of that time was, in turn, spent in the city's various museums, such as the Art Institute, the Museum of Science and Industry, the Field Museum of Natural History, by far my favorite, and the Adler Planetarium. My father, while not a Mason, definitely wanted his son to be a general lover of the arts and sciences by exposing me to these institutional treasures of the city on the lake, and he was right to do so. Education is one of the greatest gifts we can give our children. The regular exposure to art, science, and exhibits of the natural world actually resulted in me blending these things together. I not only experienced an appreciation for the beauty and meaning of the works of Chagall, Seurat, and Van Gogh, and so many others, I admired the craftsmanship that went into the creation of such works, the level of knowledge of stone masonry, the creation and blending of pigments, and the working of metal and glass to create objects that stimulate and feed the eye, the mind, and the soul itself. We've perhaps all visited the Museum of Science and Industry at some point in our lives and taken a ride through the coal mine exhibit and seen the grandeur of the model trains and the joy of the baby chick hatchery, the machines and devices we as a species have invented to ease our labors are also beautiful to behold in the way that, as the renowned architect Louis Sullivan proclaimed, "Form follows function." And this edict of Sullivan's can also be found, in my humble opinion, in the dioramas of taxidermied animals, the artifacts of ancient man, and the structures of the stars and planets as found at the Field in Adler. Form follows function, and in that form can be found beauty, the artful hand of the grand architect of the universe. In many ways, it seems to me, art and science are inextricably linked. Music and physics are both derivations and applications of mathematics, and engineering, that cornerstone of architecture, that wide-ranging metaphor on which the craft is based, is the application of the principles of science. For the 47th problem of Euclid, better known as the Pythagorean theorem, is regularly used in the construction of buildings to ensure the squares are good and true. And just as the artist learns rudimentary shapes and forms as part of their initial training, so does the architect first draft basic geometric objects with square and compasses before progressing to the likes of the beauties of composite columns and beyond. Many of the old classical painters were also alchemists, alchemy being the progenitor of the modern science of chemistry, for they needed their paints and pigments to stand the tests of time and weather exposure to light and other elements. And the pianist knows the pressing of a key to produce a note is deceptively simple. The complex engineering that goes into the action of a piano is astounding when seen and complicated. Today there is a push for STEM in our education system, science, technology, engineering, and math. But what good are such things without an appreciation for the inherent beauty of the things we are studying and building? Or ornamentation that stirs the soul? Indeed, we need more than STEM in our and our students' lives. But the arts, also known as the humanities, as well, so that we can better understand the impact and possibilities that science and its fruit, technology, will have on us and our fellows. Art and science, in my opinion, are both disciplines that push the bounds of knowable reality. Science for the physical world, and art for the empathic and spiritual realms. And by pushing these bounds, both points of view act as different paths leading to the same goal, to understand better the inner workings of the great architect of the universe, and thus find greater communion with him.
All right, so one of the things that Brother Reb does within this piece, within his response, is he truly makes this personal. I felt that not only is he bringing the idea from memory and engaging us on an emotional level, he brings it back to a practical level that we would use today when we're thinking about STEM projects or a number of other scientific advances, and I felt it was just too cool of a response not to share with you all. Feel free to leave your comments about Brother Reb's post, his response to the 47th problem of Euclid, in the comments on YouTube or on Facebook or wherever. But I wanted to thank Brother Reb for allowing us to share his thoughts on the response of the 47th problem of Euclid. Next up, recently I put together, some of you might know, a kind of cohort on the esoteric division of the Kansas Lodge of Research. Brother Joe Martinez is my counterpart, and our boss is Alex Powers, who is the director of the Kansas Lodge of Research. And I will say that every other month or so, Joe and I go back and forth to talk a little bit about the esoteric nature of Freemasonry. And so this week, I just wanted to read the letter that I was able to give for the Kansas Lodge of Research for the esoteric division, and I hope you enjoy it. It is centered really around more of that conversation about the West Gate, but also perhaps some redeeming qualities. Now, here we go. Brothers all, as the months have crept slowly by, our planet has begun to warm up for us here in the Northern Hemisphere. It's something that I seem to think I just can't wait for each year. Recently, on a trip to visit a lodge, I discovered some paperwork that had been issued by a particular Grand Lodge. There was a strongly worded letter and a procedure book that gave steps relative to how a proper investigation committee should operate. Guarding the West Gate, the old Masonic idiom meaning watch who the heck we let into this thing we all love. It's a topic that seems never to die. Many times we get hung up on the idea of felonies and crimes. When a petitioner has led a life that is less than, shall we say, decent, we show them the door, hopefully. However, there are those who are good men who do, in fact, join our ranks and possess not one single philosophical bone in their body, not one fire within their minds on the more profound significance of our ritual, our practices, and our teachings. A service club we are not. We use allegorical and philosophical concepts to encourage our candidates and members to grow mentally and spiritually. If a man has joined our ranks and has no interest in these esoteric endeavors, he has indeed sullied our ranks. He is a drone in the hive of nature. If a man has crossed our threshold and his eyes have no spark, no licking flame that feeds on the intellectual pursuits, it is our dishonor. Such is the case in every Masonic lodge in America. And while these lapses in judgment are contained within the annals of our records, let us not see them as mistakes. Let us see opportunity. If a man has no flame in his soul, let us be the ones to light it ablaze. To every man that walks blind, let him find within our ranks and halls kindling in subjects, flint within the fellowship, and a spark when the two shall meet. The esoteric work of Freemasonry is of the utmost importance. If one is unable to work to become a better man, if he is unwilling to put himself against himself in a day-to-day comparison, if he is reluctant to hear words of meaning and encouragement, he is indeed unqualified. And even if such a man finds himself with a dues card in his wallet, he will be a mere member and never a Mason. My brothers, we must work to engage the brothers in the great work, to dive into the words of the ritual and explore its meaning. Not in literalism, but in the allegorical sense. We have the tools to increase the activity and engagement of our membership, the key to longevity in our Masonic halls, and the absolute key to member retention. We will light these fires and see Freemasonry become more vital than ever before. Real brothers practicing the royal art in practical ways, changing their lives, their families' lives, and their communities all for the better. Now let's get into the Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
Your first entry into a Masonic lodge is a moment filled with mystery and questions. The senior deacon and stewards have prepared you by dressing you in strange clothing and blindfolding you. You find yourself wearing, perhaps in some form of ominous symbolism, a rope around your neck. You enter the lodge in darkness, and from that very moment, though you are blind, some things immediately begin to come to light. The senior deacon explains why you are greeted in a certain way. Then you begin a journey around the lodge where more will be revealed. Some of what you hear will become immediately clear. You will hear some things you don't retain just because you're getting too much information all at once. And some things will take a lifetime to understand. But no one says anything about that rope. Why is it there? What is it for? Finally, after your obligation, you hear the worshipful master order the deacons to remove the rope. He calls it a cable tow. It's the first time you've heard that terminology. Its function, you gather, has been to bind you symbolically to the lodge, but you learn your obligation now performs that function. Likewise, in the second and third degrees, there is a rope, a cable tow. First, around your arm, then around your waist. Removed as you are bound to the lodge, and in fact, as the lodge brothers are bound to you by additional ties. Much has been said about the symbolism of the cable tow. Its functionality, or the fact it alludes to binding and leading the candidate, is fairly straightforward. Other aspects of its significance remain subject to opinion and speculation. Some have compared it to an infant's umbilical cord, especially in the first degree, before you become a brother, inasmuch as it symbolizes a lifeline between the candidate, a Masonic infant, and the lodge. Extending this analogy, although the physical cord is cut between the infant and his mother, the spiritual bond between the two remains. In the same manner, when the cable toe is removed, the spiritual bond between the lodge and new brother also remains. It is likely its derivation comes from the German word of similar pronunciation, cable tau, which means cable rope, and that's what it was called in many early versions of the ritual. We hear much about the length of one's cable toe, and much symbolism is applied to that terminology. Those same old rituals often define that length as 3 miles. Possibly representing that distance from the lodge, within which a brother was required to attend meetings. Other commentaries, I might add, set that length anywhere from 15 inches to 15 miles. Clearly, though, its symbolism alludes to being able to perform or accomplish our duties if within the length of our cable toe. That is, the reasonable scope of our abilities. It has been said to signify the initiate's belief in God and his devotion to him. In this context, it represents the candidate being chained or tied to God, indicating his dependence upon the deity, with the cable toe itself providing a sort of leash, leading the uninitiated, unknowing candidate from darkness to light. That is, from ignorance to knowledge of all-powerful God Almighty. I have been told some European lodges only use the cable toe in the entered apprentice degree. That makes sense if we view the cable toe's purpose as binding the candidate to the lodge until he himself does so by taking his obligation. But here in the U.S., we use it in all 3 degrees. The difference is, in the first degree, it has a physical purpose, to bind the candidate, to lead the candidate almost in a forceful manner. In the second and third degrees, it is a guide, an aid, a strengthening for the Masonic life to come. The cable toe binds us and leads us and guides us. And think about this. Along with the scope of our abilities, its length ever increases as we continue through our Masonic journey. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
Our thanks goes out to illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison for his extrapolation here of the cable toe in Freemasonry. Certainly not enough is talked about within the walls of the lodge, outside of the lecture, and then only briefly, as he's mentioned. So this short little expose on that symbol is much appreciated. If you enjoyed this, please head on over to YouTube and check out his YouTube channel, The 1 Minute Mason. And also, you can watch the videos that he has created for these 1 Minute Masons on his channel, as well as on the WCY podcast or the Whence Came You YouTube channel. What else have you learned about the cable toe in your time? For the Craftsman Plus, I'd love to know if you had any personal revelations about the cable toe and Freemasonry. This week, for the tarot card draw, I'm going to be using a reproduction deck of the Marseille deck, which I picked up at a local bookstore for, I think it was $10, and it came with a book. It was a steal, but again, you know, they're just cards, so cool, right? And they're reprints, so it's not like there's a local artist who's benefiting from them or anything. It's the original art. And I think we're going to use that. I'll do the daily card draw. What does tarot have to do with Freemasonry? I have to say this every time we do this. Absolutely nothing. If you're upset that I'm doing this, please don't be. Because all we're doing is drawing a single card, looking at its prescribed meaning within the tarot teachings, and then we're seeing how that might affect us in our life, what it tells us that we could be experiencing, or something to look at within our subconscious, and then ultimately how we deal with that Masonically using the working tools of Freemasonry. So, it's kind of like, as I've said in the past, a psychological Rorschach. We'll draw a card, it will mean something to you, most likely, or something will come to mind, and you'll want to explore that, and then see how you can deal with that Masonically. So let's go ahead, I'm going to shuffle the deck. I don't shuffle the deck any particular number of times. Okay, and we'll draw one card. All right, so the card we have drawn is the Five of Wands. This may not be completely apparent to some people who have not seen the Marseille deck before. It looks a lot different than anything, because this comes from, like, before Pamela Coleman Smith did her artwork that is so famous that everybody has copied and since made their own iteration of. So I'll post a picture of this Five of Wands within the Craftsman Plus group for you guys to look at, and I'll give the deck identification and all of that. But for this particular card, let's look at what this card means in a practical sense. And so with the Marseille deck, there's never going to be an upper or a lower meaning, meaning there's no specific thing that it means if it's upright versus reversed, because they are absolutely mirrored in most cases. So for this one, the Five of Wands typically will represent some sort of change in your life. Think about wands as a thing of like magic or manifesting. And so it can also represent this change or maybe even a conflict. You might have some tension in your life right now or competition with other people in your workplace or maybe even in your lodge. You might be butting heads with somebody within your organization and it might be hindering you from moving toward completing the assigned tasks that you have for yourself or your goals. The Five of Wands also tells us that there may be more than one person working against us. And maybe it's not a person, but, you know, in the business world, we say things like, oh, we encountered some headwinds. So these might be headwinds. What this card is not necessarily all this bad news, but it tells us that we have opportunity. And this opportunity comes to us to say, hey, we should really think about this. Take some time, stop just reacting emotionally to whatever might be going on, And we need to think about this as an opportunity to adapt and overcome, rising above the loud noise, the cacophony of baloney that this is causing you. This might include things like thinking and journaling about the problem or the issue or the conflict. It might say to you, hey, it's time to go talk to other people within the scope of what's going on to get their subjective opinion also. And it's important that you're going to listen, not react. And you're going to take all that feedback, right? It's like you're getting the different pieces of the puzzle so you can put it all together and really see what's going on. Now, the Five of Wands is also something that represents not just chaos or these kinds of things. It also, because it has this idea of different ideas or differences, it encourages the idea of diversity and differences of ideologies. When this card is drawn, what we really should think about in a positive sense is the idea that we should be happy and enthusiastic about moving towards operational or personal changes. Change is inevitable, and so we need to be enthusiastic about it. Something else to think about here is that this card asks you to be strategic, to be honest, and to listen to subjective opinions to find a way to overcome whatever adversity you might be facing. Again, I'll post a picture of the card for you to take a look at. That's it for this week. I hope you all enjoyed this journey into the various topics we've discussed this week. I want to thank one more time our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners for all of your assistance in bringing this show to millions of listeners around the world for the last 11 years. And so I also want to thank everybody out there who likes and shares the videos, especially those brothers who share these things with their lodges and the brothers of their lodge. Once more, thank you, everybody. I'll talk to you all next week when we give a rundown of the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education and what has happened there. Also, we'll have a couple interviews coming up in the next month or so, some surprise guests and whatnot. It's going to be a lot of fun. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.